does it take to be nominated as Driver of the Year? 6 million accident-free miles in a career is a good start. Welcome back to The Fleet. I'm your host, Albert Chow, and today we have a special episode with a guest I'm very excited to introduce to you, Jan Kornberg. Jan is a driver for Barney Trucking and was recently selected as a Lytx Driver of the Year. He's been a professional truck driver for over 40 years and has received numerous awards throughout his career, including Lytx DriveCam Good Driving Award and the Glen Barney Hall of Fame Award. In the 6 million miles that he's driven, Kornberg has never been involved in an accident and has never had a driver citation. An impressive record. On this show, we talk to all kinds of managers, executives, and industry thought leaders, but rarely do we get to sit down with a driver doing the hard work every day. In today's conversation, Jan shares with us how he got into trucking, what his day-to-day looks like, and his thoughts on safe driving. Plus, he shares some of the craziest things he's seen on the road in his career. All of that and more on today's episode with Jan Kornberg. The Fleet is brought to you by our friends at Lytx. Whether you manage a fleet of 5 vehicles or 5,000, Lytx is here to help. Lytx Fleet Dash Cams are powered by best-in-class machine vision and artificial intelligence, designed to help commercial fleets and drivers operate more safely, efficiently, and profitably with the industry's most comprehensive and customizable fleet management platform. Go to lytx.com/thefleet to learn more today. That's lytx.com/thefleet. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of The Fleet. And today, a special guest, we have the Lytx Driver of the Year. He drives for Barney Trucking, Jan Kornberg. Jan, welcome to the show.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
All right. So right out the gate, how did you become Driver of the Year?
They nominated me for that. I mean, I guess you would say 41 years of driving, no accidents.
It's amazing.
6 million miles. That's probably how it all started. Over 6 million.
Over 6 million miles, no accidents. Have you ever been rear-ended?
No, never have.
We got to knock on some wood. Find a piece of wood, quick, knock on it. I'm knocking on it for you, man. Because when you said no accidents, I mean, I know you haven't caused accidents, but I'm like thinking like 6 million miles, like surely you've been in an accident. It's like, oh my goodness, you haven't even been rear-ended. So I'm knocking on wood for you.
I had a guy, and it's not been too long ago, cut me off. And he moved over and took out of his mirror and stuff on the side of my trailer. But I, you know, I didn't cause it. He did. So that's probably, I've been in, some close deals, but nothing that you'd want to have a cop come and see.
So that is quite a bit of experience. That's substantial experience, substantial skill involved in what you have done over the years. You know, what I want to do is, for the purpose of this episode, the reason why we want you on this show is we want to kind of share your story of how you got involved in the trucking industry, kind of some of the things you've seen over these 40 years, as well as some of the tips and tricks that you've had to maintain such a good record, as well as maybe some tips and tricks for others. But, you know, we've got a lot to dive into, but let's get started from the beginning. How did you even get into this industry? Take us back 40 years ago. I was born in 1980, just to let you know.
That's when I started driving truck back in 1980. So there you go. How this deal all started was, as I was working for the railroad at the time, and we had a flood come down one of the canyons to take out the railroad, which I was going to make my career, being working on the railroad. And they took out the Salina division. And so I had to go find a job. And I knew guys that drove for Barney's. I had a good friend that, funny you should say, we would go dancing every month, and he drove for Barney's. And I said, how does a guy get on driving truck? And he says, come over and meet Brad Barney. And Brad Barney's our president. And it took me 3 months to get on with Brad and on with Barney Trucking, because I would go see him every week. And he says, you got any experience? And I says, I've got a little. He said, he just kept putting me off. And finally he got tired of me, I guess, coming around. And so he gave me a job. So that's kind of how it all started. And luckily my friend, kind of put a good word in for me. And so there we started driving truck.
So that's a very different experience then as to what's happening now. We see now, we understand that trucking companies are, they're like dying. They're begging. They need people to sign up, want to drive. That's a very different experience from when you started, for people being like, ah, I don't know about this guy. He's got no experience. Now driving companies are like, trucking companies are like, hey, man, come here. No experience necessary. We'll get you your CDL. We'll do a lot of stuff to help you, to help you get going.
Yeah. Back then, we didn't even need a CDL. I mean, you know, I went with a guy. You know, I trained with a guy for a couple of weeks. You know, I went with him and he kind of taught me the ins and outs. You got to understand where we go. We go up into mountain country to our coal mine. I haul coal to different power plants. I've gone to 8 different power plants, you know, around our area delivering coal. And to our rail heads and stuff like that. So, but this guy that I went with was very impressive. I went with him for 2 weeks, never once seen him grind a gear. And that's, wow. He was phenomenal. I thought, man, I kind of want to be like him. And I still grind a few gears, but he was just a perfectionist. And that's kind of what, you know, kind of enlightened me, or kind of give me the idea of, you know, he was a hand, and that's kind of what I wanted to be.
There you go. Yeah. A lot of skill and craft in the trade.
Absolutely.
You know, you mentioned just a moment ago that one of the things that you haul is
coal.
That's got to be considered somewhat dangerous material, because if it spills, it's going to pollute.
Absolutely.
Where it is. It's flammable. How was your approach? You know, right now we with our guests, a safety culture is certainly promoted quite a bit by these different trucking companies. What were the safety requirements like at the time when you started? Who was telling you like, hey, man, this is dangerous stuff? Or was it just inherently known like, hey, we got to be very cautious about moving this product?
Like you said, it was very, you know, we've got to move the product and we got to move it right.
Yeah.
And you got to understand, when I first went to work there, there was only 35 employees. We're over 500 strong now.
Wow.
And so, you know, it has grown, a bunch. When we went there, and this gentleman that taught me, he instilled that we do everything to the best of our ability. I mean, people, they begged for us to come to deliver the product. You know, we've delivered dirt. I mean, you know, and we have belly dumps and stuff like that. So we hauled dirt and we hauled stuff, but guys wanted Barney Trucking to deliver their product because they knew it would be done right and there wouldn't be any problems. So that's the kind of instillment that we had in our valley and you know, surrounding areas.
You know, one of the things that I think that's interesting from your perspective is this attitude towards road safety that we've seen kind of erode over the last couple of decades. You know, we've had multiple guests on our show, even breakout numbers and statistics. One recent one that stands out to mind is Dr. Paul Atchey. He was on our show and he talked about how, even though at peak pandemic, total miles driven by people had gone down, total fatalities had gone up. And our cars are safer today than they were then. But like, we have adopted this kind of laissez-faire attitude to driving, even though the numbers are all indicating that it's becoming a more dangerous activity, not, you know, more safe activity. So if the technology is better, safety measures are better. We should know the rules by now. I'd love to hear your perspective on what is going on in whether it's pedestrian, civilian behavior, non-trucking behavior, because you've seen it all, right?
Pretty much.
What do you see happening with people in regards to their attitudes towards driving? Is it actually getting worse, or is it just being more closely monitored?
I really think it's kind of getting worse a little bit, because no disrespect to our younger generation, they don't have the patience, you know, they just want to get there.
Yeah.
Back when I started, I mean, it was, you know, they did preach a lot of safety. Our deal back then, I mean, was the pride. I see that kind of going away. It's all just go, 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 go.
That means also you sat through the transition of, you know, a couple different technology waves. One of the things that's happened more recently, of course, is in-cab cameras to help the it's supposed to help the driver stay safe, but also the cameras on the vehicles to help absolve response, you know, absolve if there's a if there's an accident, you could have data to show like, hey, I wasn't at fault. A lot of our guests have talked about how that transition's kind of tough, especially for the older guard to adopt this technology. How about for yourself? When this was first introduced as an idea, were you open to it? Or because you're, you, it sounds like you take pride in your craft. So were you like, hey, it's not a big deal. I'm already killing it. I'm already very good at my job. I don't need a camera. You're not going to see anything. Or were you one of the, were you more reserved? Like, hey, are they looking for reasons to pick on me? I'd love to hear your attitude towards that, because that's one of the big, that's one of the big implementation barriers that we hear from different driving and fleet operators, is that they're nervous about what the older group or existing driver, doesn't even have to be older, the existing drivers will say about being, you know, big brothered or monitored.
Well, you got to understand, the guys that we had were old school and they didn't need a babysitter. And so it took a lot of just being there, you know, and to this day, you know, it's a good safety thing, because I've had a couple of incidents that they've gone back on my cameras and said, okay, it wasn't your fault. And so probably it's been a safe thing. I just look at it as another safety tip for me. It doesn't bother me that they're there. So I just, you know, it's just part of the equipment that I deal with.
How long did it take you before you were like, I'm okay with this? Because like you said, there was a little bit of reservation. Like you said, you guys weren't excited, right? I'm not saying you were, I'm not saying you were pushing back. You weren't excited. But how long did it take before the team was like, okay, this is okay?
It probably took a couple of years. I mean, you know, we've had cameras in there probably for 20 years, 15 years. So it took a couple of years, because back when they first put cameras in there, those cameras had red lights on them and green lights that you would slam, the lights would come on. So that would kind of show that you'd done a naughty, or you'd slammed on your brakes or something, you know, even gone over a bump. So the cameras have been so updated, you don't even know they're there anymore. So you just, you know, move on and, you know, do your job.
How about when the first, and I don't know if you've even experienced this, but I know that one of the main goals that companies have is to, of course, also improve driver skill, safety practices. And I know that some of the companies, they'll take their drivers and do like some coaching with them and say, hey, listen, you know, this is what we observed and this is what you're doing. How about for yourself? Were you even were things brought to your attention that you otherwise maybe wouldn't have known that you then were able to like improve or change?
Absolutely. We do usually safety meetings every month. And first things that come up saying, guys, we're seeing this on the cameras. What can we do to improve it? They instill in us that, you know, we need to start stopping at the stop signs. We need to not follow in too close. And that's a big thing. That's a big thing, because I pack 128,000 ton of coal, and I've got doubles, and you don't stop them, really easy. So they do preach following too close and running stop signs and stuff like that. So, you know, they remind us of that every safety meeting. And it's a good thing they do, because we're in such a rut what we do. I mean, you know, we go to the same places every day. We're not over the roaders type of deal. And so, you know, it's not like that and there is some trucks that run to Salt Lake and stuff like that, but I do not. But I'm in kind of just an area, and that's where we go. So,
yeah, give us an idea of like what's your daily schedule look like. So it sounds like you don't do too much. Is it like you have a designated route? Do you have to go across states? Like how does your day look?
I did have a run that I went to Las Vegas. I did that for 13 years, so it wasn't like that. You know, I didn't go down the freeway and go to Las Vegas, and I hauled coal for 13 years. Seeing a lot going down through there. But anyway, my day starts about 2:30. I go over and get my truck, do a pre-trip, climb in it, head to the coal mines. I go to two different coal mines, and then I deliver to power plants right now. And so, you know, I deliver to two different power plants in our area. So that's what my day is. I do that for about 10 and a half hours, 11 hours, and come home. So that's kind of what I do.
Dang. Okay. So from 2:30, so you're back. You, if you're out the door at 2:30 a.m., you're back. It sounds like around 12-ish, 1 o'clock.
I wish sometimes. You know, time I get my pre-trip done, fueled and whatnot, and go in and see dispatch and stuff like that, and see where I'm doing for tomorrow. It's usually 11 hours, 11 and a half hours. Not driving, but, you know, time I do my pre-trip and post-trips and stuff like that, you know, it's about 11 hours.
Hey, how I measure the workday is out the door, in the door. When I leave to when I come back, that's work because I can't do anything else.
It's usually 11 and a half, 12 hours for me. So, you know, and I'm kind of a workaholic. I mean, my dad instilled in me that a good work ethic. And so that's what I do for Barney Trucking. When they hired me, I hired to do a job. And that's what I do, is I go do my job.
There you go. And you do it well with the safety record that you have. When you drive, are you typically crossing? For those unfamiliar with the Utah geography territories, it sounds like it's mostly freeway. And is it rural freeway, or do you have to cross mountains? Like, give us an idea of what you're doing.
We do a lot of two-lane driving. It's probably half and half, you know, what we do. You know, we go up what we call the canyon, and the coal mine's about 36 miles from Salina. We take on a two-lane road, you know, and we do a lot of two-lane road driving. That's the reason they instill in a lot of safety as far as, you know, following too close and stuff like that, you know. And so it's about half and half, three-way, two-lane. So
for, you know, non-drivers out there, so for people that are listening to this podcast that are curious about this industry, you know, I personally drive on two-lane roads quite a bit. And whenever I see a semi or a big truck coming my way the opposite way, I always get a little nervous because I'm like, oh, man, if they cross over, I'm done, right? Through this show, I've learned quite a bit about how the drivers of these commercial trucks don't really cross over. It's usually when this happens, it's a great majority of civilian drivers, basically. I don't know what they're doing, but sometimes there's no one left to explain what's happened. But like that, how much, like, I guess, are you like ultra focused at that moment when you're riding a two-lane road where it's like, hey, listen, I cannot swerve over this double yellow in any way whatsoever. You're driving through canyons. I already know it's seeing big trucks move up through the canyons. It looks for sure very tough and difficult to navigate up through these roads. You know, give us an idea of like your alertness factor when you're doing this type of job.
It has to be, the roads that we're driving on right now are very narrow. I mean, they don't have much shoulder and whatnot. So you better be on top of your game because you're going to be off the shoulder. And then we've had two or three head-ons type of deal, and it's been the civilians that have crossed the center line and tagged us. So not saying that that's a bad thing or whatever, but, you know, we've had three wrecks just in the last 2 months that civilians have crossed the road, passing where they shouldn't have.
Oh, and trying to pass on a winding canyon road?
Yeah. And passing on a double yellow line where they can't see, and, you know, and that's the end of it. The guys around that do our job, I mean, they are very conscientious of the two lanes, and they're on top of their game. They're professionals. 90% of the guys are professionals that do what we do.
Yeah. So I should be less nervous about the truck coming at me and more nervous about everyone else.
Well, no, you always want to have that one good eye on that truck because you never know about what he's doing. So, but yeah.
Yeah, this two-lane road I happen to drive down, it's typically to the beach. But because it's the beach, I always think to myself, man, I don't know if these people have been partying all night. I don't know if they've been, partying all day or, you know, sure. I'm sure some of them. We all know that we've driven by drunk drivers. You just don't know which ones they are, or I'm sure you can spot them. But when they're coming head on, it's not clear. And I always think to myself, man, like, how am I, you know, how will I react if this guy starts crossing over? Luckily for me, it's like relatively wide shoulder. Like, I have pull off area. It'd be grass or possibly in the water a little bit, a little bit of problem. So I'm not quite like you, where one side it's a mountain, the other side it's a cliff. That's a little bit of a different ball game.
Yeah, there's a lot of truth to that on our deal. I mean, And, you know, and we have a lot of snow. So, you know, a guy has to be pretty, you know, conscious of the shoulder and stuff like that. So.
So one of the things that a lot of trucking technology companies are trying to get down the path of is to be predictive on dangerous conditions and potentially rerouting drivers. Let's start right there. For the routes you do, do you have a lot of alternative ways to get to these locations? Or is it one of those things where point A and point B are really only connected by one road? You have to go through it.
Pretty close one road. Years ago, when we had different trucks and stuff like that, it was nothing for the freeways to be closed.
Yeah.
We'd go up them. You may not believe this, and our people may not believe this, but we'd be pushing snow with our bumpers. And they would send us to the coal mines and stuff like that. I mean, yeah, I've seen it all. I mean, I have. I've pushed snow with my bumpers. And back the old days, if we couldn't make it to the mine, they'd come and hook onto us with pickups and pull us to the mine.
I mean, it was imperative. Yeah, that coal had to get delivered.
Yeah, coal had to get delivered. And we get paid by the load, so.
Oh, that's good point as well.
Right. If you're not delivering that load, you're not getting paid.
Well, if there's snow on the road and there's a big power outage, and there's the reason for the power outage is not the lines, it's that there's no coal at the plant. This is going to be a problem. Like,
right.
People are going to call it. So, given the fact that you have such an imperative mission, right? So many people depend on this happening. Curiously, does the state, like, are the roads better maintained by the state or the local municipalities now? Because, you know, it seems like in modern day law would not allow for the driver to push snow like that. It's too dangerous, but I don't know. Like, give us an idea. Are the roads better maintained or how does it work?
Now they are very much so.
Okay.
And the thing about it is there's so many of us. All they have to do is put down a little bit of salt and we've got that road broke up and they're glad to see us go. Because, you know, we make it safe for the public and stuff like that because we break up the snow and whatnot. So it works both ways.
So one of the things that drivers, when we do get when we do get to have drivers on the shows, they get to share some of the crazy stories of the things that they've seen. So while you have, you know, let's repeat again, 40 plus years of safe driving record, 6 million plus miles accident free. However, you surely have witnessed either crazy accidents or crazy oddities. Accidents are a little bit morbid. I don't want to go too much into detail those. What are some of the crazy things you've seen people do while driving where you're like, I can't believe this is happening. Like this guy is definitely a threat to society. I don't know if anything happened, but you know, what are some of the crazier things you've seen in like driver behavior?
Just passing where they shouldn't. I mean, I've seen people pass on double yellow lines that they couldn't even see. You know, especially the coal miners coming out of the mine. I mean, they'll pass us and shouldn't even because you can't even see. And that's what scares me the most. In fact, I had one coming out of the mine the other day, double yellow line, couldn't see. I couldn't even see him. I'm up in the air.
Yeah.
And he passed. And I thought, you've got to be kidding me. You know, and there was another car coming and it had to go off the shoulder of the road. And that's what I see a lot of.
What about your philosophy towards motorcyclists? Or do you, because I mean, it's a general belief, although I don't know how many people have data to support it, but it's a general belief that motorcyclists are more aggressive, especially they're riding the race bikes. Like because those things can fly, you know, those things can roll from 60 to 90 in a second.
Right. Yeah. In fact, funny you should say that. It's been years ago when I was running to Vegas, there was three bullet bikes that come up to the side of me. I mean, it scared the crap out of me. They were gone. And I thought those guys had to be doing 120 mile an hour. I mean, it was just, and they were gone. I mean, you couldn't even see them anymore, but we don't have the motorcycles and stuff like you guys probably do in your area and stuff like that. We do have a few and they're not as aggressive around our, you know, because we had so many big trucks and mm-hmm. stuff like that. So they're pretty safe around our place because, yeah, it's crazy.
I mean, that makes total sense. Yeah, I'm thinking of like there's places there's this place in North Carolina. It's North Carolina and Tennessee border. They call it like the Tail of the Dragon. It's a route through the mountains and it's like 300 something curves in 11 miles. and like motorcyclists regularly take their motorcycles there, some to leisurely ride and some to like rip through it. And so I've, there's like, there's trees. There's trees just dedicated where they've pinned up like the, or nailed up like the motorcycle parts of the people who have crashed there to kind of give you like, hey, a little warning. Like, hey, when you're about to end, like, even if there isn't, you know, an oncoming truck or something, the amount of turns you're about to do, like, this is a highly skilled ride. But I was always wondering, like, you know, when, because I see motorcyclists pass me aggressively when I'm driving, but I always wondered, I wonder if they do the same thing to, you know, tractor trailers, because it seems like that's such a terrible idea, but, you know, I don't know. People pull it.
They want to get around that because you got to understand that dust off of that coal slaps them in the face. So they don't like being back there.
Oh, so yeah. I didn't even think about that.
There is a little coal dust that comes off of that on occasion. So they don't stay behind us very long. So they're gone.
So one of the things that's also happened over the years that's, you know, I'd love to hear your perspective on, we kind of touched on it a little earlier, is obviously the economy's grown. There's more demand for drivers than ever, but there's less people. It seems like there's less people interested. I'm not quite sure what's happening. We've had different guests give different perspectives on this, but we do know that there's a big demand for drivers. There's not enough people entering the field. Why do you think that is? And I'd love for your perspective on what do you think could entice more people to do this?
First of all, entice more people. Money, money, money. It's all about the money. I mean, and truck drivers, we run the country. I'm sorry. If that wasn't for us, we wouldn't have a loaf of bread.
Right.
That's what kind of, I guess, enticed me to be a truck driver. I wanted to be able to deliver a product. It takes a lot of patience, you have to want to be set in there to do it, and a lot of pride in that. And the kids nowadays, you know, they're so computer oriented and whatnot that it takes a lot of hard work to be a truck driver. People think that you just sit there. You don't. I mean, it is very draining, very demanding, very, you know, because you have to be so on your game at all times. Mm-hmm. And I think the kids nowadays don't want that. They don't want to have that responsibility of, they've got a $500,000 rig underneath them and they have to sit there and take care of it.
Yeah. I've seen recently that because of the shortage of, or because of the short supply chain disruptions, I do know that shipping rates are starting to climb. Their shipping rates are just starting to climb. I know that driver pay is, or the different driving company operators we've had on our show talk about, hey, they've increased bonuses, they're trying to increase wages. Overall, it seems like your hypothesis, what you said earlier, like, you know, truckers run the country, or the country's built on the backbone of trucking and logistics. As is absolutely true. We saw that in the early beginning stages of the pandemic. We're starting to see that now. Like we just had a person on another one of our shows talk about how they have to air freight their product in because like the shipping ports right now are so backed up because no one wants to work the ports, but their air freight quote went from 8,000 a load to 38,000 a load.
Yes. Yes, I've heard that.
So that's gonna start impacting consumer prices. So consumer prices are gonna go, prices on everything are gonna go through the roof because people can't move them. You can't move them. There's not enough people to move the product. So who has more money is gonna get the product first.
Absolutely. I heard a story about a guy one of our KFC stores here in Richfield couldn't get their product because they couldn't find a driver to deliver it.
So they got no chicken to sell.
Right. So you couldn't get your chicken. So they closed down the KFC because they couldn't get their chicken. Every trailer, every truck that you see go by, drivers wanted.
Yeah.
It's a monopoly right now. I mean, if you want to go to work for driving a truck, you know, you can go anywhere in the world and get hired if you can drive a truck. And if you're willing to work and do the job.
Well, there you go. Now maybe your recruiters are going to be calling you driver of the year. 6 million plus miles. I swear some of them hang out on this show. They're like, hey, I want to talk to this guy. Well, Jan, it was awesome having you on the show today. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for sharing your story. You know, it's fun hearing the progression from, hey, you went in the beginning of your career, begged for 3 months, or I wouldn't say beg. You bothered. You showed a serious interest in Barney and said, hey, for 3 months, I want to work for you. And now it's completely flipped where Barney is probably waving his hands like, hey, somebody, please come work here.
A lot of truth to that.
yeah, it's an interesting thing how the industry has shifted so fast. There's more drivers than ever. There's more trucks than ever. But it's still, we as an economy, our country, we haven't fulfilled our needs. We still need more people to enter this industry to deliver product. Jan, I want to thank you for doing what you do. And thanks for joining us today on The Fleet.
Thank you very much, sir. Appreciate you.
The Fleet is presented by our friends at Lytics, the award-winning video telematics and fleet management solution. Trusted by more than 4,000 fleets worldwide, Lytics is the next generation of fleet technology. Help drivers address risky driving behaviors like cell phone use, speeding, and inattentive behind the wheel, all while harnessing the power of video and data to thrive in today's competitive environment. From safety to compliance to fleet tracking, Lytics technology offers the industry's most comprehensive and customizable fleet management platform. Go to lytics.com/thefleet to learn more today. That's lytx.com/thefleet.